We welcome to the largest Pride Month celebration ever held at the White House, but just the beginning. But for all the progress we made, we know real change, real challenges still remain. When a person can be married in the morning and thrown out of a restaurant for being gay in the afternoon, something is still very wrong in America. That's why the Congress must pass and send me the Equality Act to qualify protections for the LGBT community. So today, I want to send a message to the entire community, especially to transgender children. You are loved. You are heard. You are understood. And you belong. Your president, my entire administration, has your back.
Welcome back. Another episode of Our Interesting Times. It is my pleasure to have Pete Quiñones back on the show. Of course, he's the host of the eponymous Pete Quiñones Show. So, Pete, how are you doing?
Doing good, Tim. How are you?
Very well. Thanks for coming back on the show. Well, what are we going to talk about? A lot to talk about, I guess. There's always a lot to talk about. It's a question of what we want to talk about. Helen Keller? What's this? She's as genuine as Anne Frank. What's going on here?
it's so funny because, like, anybody who they tell you the story of Helen Keller when you're a kid,
yes,
because only a kid's going to believe this story, that someone who's who's blind and deaf becomes like this arch communist.
Yeah. Was she good at pinball?
Yeah,
she played pinball.
Yeah, so they're like, I mean, they're the funniest one I saw was somebody dug it up they were flying across the English Channel once, and she took the reins for 30 minutes, and I'm just like,
what?
Can we stop with this Helen Keller crap? You know, I live in Alabama, and the Helen Keller house, you know, she was from Alabama, and there's a house here, and people have asked me, they're like, you know, are you going to go visit it? I'm like, I'll get kicked out in 5 seconds because I'm just going to go in there and go, this is all crap. None of this is true. You know, all of her writings, quote unquote, writings, you know, just stop as soon as her, like, lifelong assistant, Ann Sullivan, dies, who's an arch communist. So she's an arch communist. I mean, it's just, it's the biggest bullcrap story that any adult who, and I know we, as kids, we get indoctrinated into these things, we get brainwashed into these things. But as an adult, just stand back, watch any videos of her, like, because there are videos of her out there, and tell me that Helen Keller did all of these things they said she did. I mean, she was basically, it was like a deaf and blind Greta Thunberg, just a puppet that was put out there. And it's a feel good story, you know, the deaf and blind versus the autistic Spurgy, you know, retard.
Yeah. They overcome something, so we have to listen to them about everything.
I don't care.
Well, another thing is, you know, why would we listen about anything if she's deaf, dumb, and blind? What insight would she have into the world's problems? Well, maybe I'm being crude, mean, yeah. But like Greta Thunberg. I mean, listen to an autistic 15-year-old about the world. I'm just saying, it's not someone you want to go to. It's not really a font of wisdom or understanding or complexity.
There's a video out there where they're like, "Oh, here's Helen talking." I'm like, that's not talking. I'm sorry.
Didn't Anne something that you should like pretend to translate for or something?
Yeah, by touching her hand, like I touch her hand and we figured out a way to. I'm like, well, how did you communicate to her what each one of those meant? Like, you know, oh, there's different touches I can do on her hand. Well, how does she know what the touch means if she can't hear or see what you're? There has to be some kind of baseline here. The baseline can't even be, there can't even be a baseline set because she can't see or hear. It's like, what the hell? Why are we listening to this story? And it's just become like this running joke on a couple of my friends' podcasts, that whenever we get on a podcast together, we just like talk about just how ridiculous the story of Helen Keller is, and how, you know, when we're kids we buy it, and then it's just after that.
Well, I mean, there was the movies, The Miracle Worker,
right?
A couple, on the one with Patty Duke and Anne Bancroft, I think was the
I think it was Anne Bancroft, yeah.
And so it was in black and white, like Schindler's List, so we know it's true, right?
yeah, the wooden doors and everything.
So, I mean, it is, you look, it's, it becomes, I mean, you're told about it, and it's supposed to be the triumph of the human spirit and capable, you know. Well, the movie's called The Miracle Worker, and the fact that they're calling it a miracle might make you a little suspect. Right?
When you start tearing the story apart, you just like sit there and laugh, because it's just like, oh, how did I believe this?
And so, yeah, and I see it is ridiculous. Didn't she speak with a slight British accent?
Yeah, yeah. How'd she get a British accent? She's from 3 hours north of me here in Alabama.
I guess it makes it sound more credible, like David Attenborough narrating a nature series. You want a British accent or something.
But she didn't even have she just made like sounds that sounded like a British accent. I mean, she really wasn't speaking.
Basically, it was a carnival act, what you're saying.
Unfortunately, used this poor woman for carny stuff.
One of the many myths of the 20th century.
Many myths of the 20th century.
Wow.
Speaking of, I can't wait for E. Michael Jones' new book. I heard your interview with him. Good job.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He said he'd send me a copy, so I'm not going to pay for it. That's okay. Because this book's usually pretty expensive, so I'll see if he sends me a copy. If he doesn't, I'll end up paying for it. So I'll see what happens.
Sure.
I'm happy to support his research anyway. So,
absolutely.
And of course, was it Anne Frank's father was a fraud or something, ripping off the Germans? Because that's okay, because they're Germans. You can do anything to Germans, right?
Yeah, I did. In the same podcast, I just talked about the whole history of Otto Frank and how. I mean, he came from a very, very wealthy Jewish family, and he went to the most expensive gymnasium in, I can't remember if it was Berlin or not, but what the city that he was in, it wasn't Berlin. I can't remember what city it was, but I mean, he was just this rich guy who, he graduated college when he was 20, he went and lived in New York with the Oppenheimer family. And then he comes back to Germany, starts his business. It's a pectin business. It's a preservative that used in like jellies and stuff like that. But it can also be used to, I think, in wounds during the war to help stop the wounds. And he had a contract with the Wehrmacht until through 1944.
That's 5 years into the war.
Yeah.
You're saying the Jew Otto Frank is profiting off the war?
Well, yeah, and there is a lot of there is talk that he was actually amongst the community there in Amsterdam. He was looked down upon because he was seen as a war profiteer.
Yeah.
He lived in a very prestigious home that was called the Glass House, which you can make the obvious joke, but if everyone's hiding, you don't want to live in a house that's just like all windows and things like that. But, so 5 years into the war, he's, making a good bit of money selling the Wehrmacht pectin and I forget one other substance and from his factories. And the Wehrmacht figures out that he's cheating them. Big shock, right? I mean, it's like I know I fell out of my chair when I found out that Otto Frank was like cheating them.
Do you have like a cost plus contract with the Wehrmacht?
And he's like, it was like, well, if you're in hiding and you're doing business with your arch enemy, that doesn't make any sense at all. But you would definitely think that if you were so scared of these people that you would definitely wouldn't want to cheat them.
He wasn't crypto. He was an open Jew and occupied Amsterdam,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean,
operating. Yes.
Yeah. He wasn't hiding anything. Famously, the Wehrmacht had upwards of 30,000 Jewish soldiers that were half Jews and full Jews. I mean, the head of the Luftwaffe, Erhard Milch, was Jewish. And so he gets caught cheating and they take the eight people living in that house and they send them to camps to work. And, people are like, well, why would they send the whole family? And I'm like, well, I mean, they did that here.
Oh, Japanese.
It wasn't even like the Japanese were cheating the American government. They just sent whole families into camps.
Well, wasn't Anne Frank tossed in one of the flaming pits that Wiesel writes about?
It was the bear in Auschwitz? It was the bear in the eagle cage. Yes, that. No, she got typhus, and she died in a hospital. It's really weird that she in a hospital
in the West, like Belsen, I think, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Why would she? Why would they send her to a hospital? It's beyond me. It's beyond me.
Yeah. These are questions we cannot ask.
No, we're not allowed to ask these questions except on verboten podcasts like Our Interesting Times.
Interesting. That's interesting questions. I thought maybe she was electrocuted and like evaporated into the air on the SS electric floors that they had or something.
Yeah. I mean,
I like the pneumatic device that I think the Sonder commander would press the pedal and it was almost like a Rube Goldberg technique or mechanism would come and then conk the skull of the unfortunate inmate and they die. I remember reading about that. My favorite story is Misha and the Wolves, the lady who was adopted by wolves in the woods when she escaped from the SS and helped her make her way across Germany or occupied Germany or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's very interesting that you brought up like a Rube Goldberg machine because that really is exactly what they're the quote unquote most efficient people of all time were accused of, is just basically coming up with these contraptions that were inefficient for what they've been accused of.
I could just see them like order like Wile E. Coyote ordering from Acme or something and these devices that they... Something else when you start to scrutinize these things, and
that gets you in trouble with people like the ADL and you might even get an article written in Haaretz or, Jerusalem Post or something. Who knows?
Yeah, apparently one of the many things that are being banned is accusing Jews collectively. I guess you can never exaggerating, even though they've admitted to exaggeration because they've had to pare down the numbers and scrap certain narratives, like from 4 million down to less than 1 million without the 6 million dropping and these things, admitting that that places like Dachau and Belsen were not death camps. There weren't gas chambers there. And of course, one would construe that as perhaps being an exaggeration. Yeah. But this is the function of narratives. Narratives, spring from some sense of reality, like the camps existed, people died. The question was why they died, why right. did they get, these things. Like there was a protest on Capitol Hill on January 6th, 2021. You can spin the narrative that it was an insurrection that sought to overthrow the government, or a protest got a little raucous because people were a little upset, or there are agent provocateurs there to make sure that things did get raucous, and then they can just spin a narrative. And this can have profound consequences because you can, if you control the narrative and the history, you can use that to leverage, for supreme political powers, we see in the case of our friends, our Levantine friends, but also you can use it as sort of to what they're doing now with 1,000 people being convicted or thrown into jail. They're going after toppling a sitting president, or now indicting a former president based on a narrative of events that we're seeing. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, this is what happens when you have, decades of corruption, and when you have people who are, I'm not one of these people who's like, oh, we need term limits and everything. But when you have someone like Joe Biden, who's basically served his whole adult life in Congress, in government, and who, we could just start naming people who've been there forever. They're going to get into systematic corruption, and eventually it's going to come back and it's going to bite them. You will get caught after a while. Something's always going to come to light. And in order to not only save yourself, but save your family, save your wealth, save your name, you're going to have to go tyrannical. You're going to have to say that whoever is a threat to this, whoever is stepping up and trying to expose this, whether it be a Donald Trump, or whether it be a bunch of well-intentioned morons, going into the Capitol, and I'm not one of those people who's like everyone who went in there and everyone who was planning that whole thing was innocent. I think there were some people who were guilty, and I would like to see them, those people tried. But I mean, most of those people were just going in there because other people were going in there pretty much for no reason. And the what we're seeing now is, in my opinion, is we're just seeing what happens when oligarchs get caught. They go tyrannical and they make it so that they make examples and of people. And there's no better example that you can make than a former president of the United States who also happens to be a billionaire, who also happens to be a reality TV star, who also happens to be maybe one of the maybe the most famous person who's ever lived. Outside of Jesus Christ.
If they can do it to him. Yeah, that's, and we saw that recently with last month with the Durham report, where it's almost laid out there for everyone to see. Yes, there was an attempted, more or less attempted coup by the intelligence community, the deep state, if you will, FBI, mass media, the CIA, foreign intelligence services, a Hillary Clinton's political campaign working, commissioning, getting a false intelligence report from a foreign intelligence figure, then fed to the FBI to provide the basis for a false warrant. These things are supposed to matter. I mean, the fact that you have to swear these things out and this is the court case and these things are done on oath suggests to the public these things are supposedly serious matters. You're not supposed to lie about these things. But nevertheless, it's just exposed that these things were all fake. The investigation wasn't an investigation. It was a fabrication. That's just been exposed. And nevertheless, whether it's John Brennan or whether it's Comey, Hillary Clinton, perhaps the entire Obama administration were involved in this, and nothing happens to them. But then we get these indictments against against Trump on trumped up charges, no pun intended, right? About, and then it's the Espionage Act, this relic from the First World War, which is unconstitutional to begin with. I mean, the definition of espionage, according to the act, at least how it's been prosecuted in history, is if you publish, like if you're a journalist and you engage in like news reporting that hurts the government narrative or their policies. That's how the Woodrow Wilson administration has used it. But it's one of these, you know, the Espionage and Sedition Acts, which made it more or less sedition to speak out against the war, and espionage if you engage in purveying any information that was considered deleterious to the war effort. That's basically how it was utilized. But now they're with this, it's like a process crime where they're saying he mishandled these records. Of course, he's a president. He has complete authority to he can just wave his hand over and say declassified. It's declassified, so they can't get him on that. But now they're claiming that since the records were subpoenaed, there's some sort of confusion how the records are being handled. This was an obstruction of justice, and somehow it's a violation of the Espionage Act. But of course, you have to demonstrate that you had some sort of nefarious purpose for your actions. So it's just, they're just going after him. Of course, the judges. We've seen with the January 6th cases, the judges are just hacks. They're political hacks, and no one's really getting a fair trial in this because ultimately, at the end of the day, the regime wants these convictions, and so it's a joke now.
Yeah, and it's really nothing new. I mean, Lincoln threw journalists in prison for just writing against the war. That's always a hard one for me because I don't trust journalists even when they agree with me. During Wilson's term, they threw a lot of people who were speaking out and telling people to dodge the draft. They spent time in jail.
Yeah, and Eugene Debs was sentenced for 20 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So this really isn't anything new. The new part of it is that it always seems like they, you know, with the exception of, how Davis got treated after the Civil War or War of Northern Aggression, excuse me. I mean, Alabama, I must remember. Usually politicians get their pass. Well, I mean, politicians get their pass. I think we found out after World War II that soldiers and military men don't get a pass anymore either.
Yes.
This just doesn't, this shouldn't surprise anybody. This is the direction that we've been going in. When you look at how you can almost, you know, it's one of those things where you look at how they treated foreign countries who had nothing to do with 9/11 and how they punished them for it, how they said they were going into Afghanistan to just kill Osama bin Laden. And when Osama bin Laden escaped into Pakistan, they decided they weren't going to leave Afghanistan because, you know, Afghani girls needed to learn about critical race theory and gender studies, and George Floyd murals needed to be painted in Kabul.
And apparently robotics, too.
Yeah. And, you know, Iraq needed to be made a safe place for Shiite power, which would strengthen Iran. Oh, wait a minute. We can't have that because Saudi Arabia lost their crap. And then, you know, still look where we are. And with Iraq, Iraq was just another loss, and political loss, of course. So they punish Muslims. Now they're punishing Christians, making Christians fight each other and kill each other in Eastern Europe, in Eurasia. Then you have, I think we're going to see another attack on Muslim, one or more Muslim countries because their the ones who, because the woke is becoming the new religion. It is, they have a flag. A flag to me is a symbol of war, and it flies in the place of the American flag at the White House.
Yeah, today is Flag Day. We're recording on Flag Day. The question is, which flag are we saluting these days? Yeah,
I think it's the quote unquote progress flag.
Yeah,
it flies.
You can lose the L on that too if you want to.
And they're flying that flag is flying over U.S. embassies around the world. So I think that if this is going to be the new religion, if this is going to be the new regime, we're going to see more Muslim countries, the ones who push back against this the hardest. We'll see them be punished. And we've already seen the war on terror come home. And we knew that was going to happen. That was something that that I mean, even Ron Paul predicted, you know, a decade and a half ago, saying this war again on terror will eventually be turned on us. It is, and they're using the excuse or the very real religion of quote unquote woke, for lack of a better term, as an excuse. And you know, Trump was one of the. Trump's whole campaign was basically, you could call it anti-woke, except for, you know, certain, I mean, and they ignored, you know, his being pro-gay marriage, you know, 40 years ago, how close he is to, you know, the Iroquois tribe, and, they just ignored that.
That type of service didn't buy him much loyalty. The judge Beryl Howell, the one that's overseeing this, and one of the many indictments, I think, has pierced the attorney-client privilege, justifying it as that basically his communication with the lawyer was part of a criminal enterprise. I don't think she produced any evidence that she just asserted that to pierce the attorney-client privilege. Which could be a setup for an appeal for the case ultimately to fail. If there's some, you know, if the law is any way respected in this matter. Of course, she's a graduate of Columbia Law, and if you look at her background, she is an Eskimo. She's part of that tribe. There you go. But he doesn't. Yeah, that his service to that tribe hasn't bought him much loyalty or service when he needed it.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things I try to tell people, you know, like, you know, when I was really deep into the libertarian crowd and everything, and, you know, I was part of that crowd, I would tell them, I would say, look, you cannot bow to these people on anything. You know, unless you are 100% on board with their whole program, as everything that you've you know, taken the sacraments of abortion, the sacrament of climate change, now the trend, you know, transgenderism. Unless you've embraced all of these things wholeheartedly, you are just and you can't be a bigot. You can't be a racist, whatever that means anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you are 100% willing to embrace all of those things, if you deviate on one thing from them, they are not going to embrace you as one of theirs. And I think that Donald Trump is probably the best example you can point to on that.
Yeah, no examples. Their expectation, complete loyalty and supremacy, that's another thing. You know, we've had this one evidence of that, of course, is the White House earlier this month, the White House announcement of a national strategy to counter anti-Semitism, which is funny because what that does is it proves that if anything, the problem probably isn't anti-Semitism, it's philo-Semitism in this country, the inordinate power they enjoy. The fact that they get the White House to do that despite the lack of any evidence of any real meaningful anti-Semitism in the United States. The United States has always been sort of a paradise for them ever since they came over here in the late 19th century. That's why they've prospered so well and enjoy so much power today. But nevertheless, this becomes a pretext to suppress any opposition, any criticism, which you would expect would come naturally with their power. If you have power, you're going to have people, you know, and you exercise that power, you're going to have criticism. And if you're not neurotic, or if you're not completely solipsistic and sociopathic, you're going to expect criticism and see that criticism. You may not agree with it, but it's legitimate. It's part of living in a democratic society. But they see it as the harbinger of another pogrom or Holocaust, you know. But there was a, I think it was one of the many votes for aid to Israel. I forget when this was, but it was like 4-27 to 1, one against. And it was Ron Paul who voted against it. And he had APEC visiting him, just asking why he voted against it. It's like one vote. It's like, why would they even bother? But they don't like this one guy saying it, right? So that's, you know, that's their standard. That's what their expectation. So, I mean, yeah, you can't have arguments with those people. It's a quote from a movie. Yeah, so it's, but again, we live, what we're saying, the same time we're saying this, forget, are there two or three indictments of Donald Trump? There's one in Georgia pending or something regarding a phone call he made questioning the 2020 election down there. But at the same time, we have this exposure of this complete blatant corruption of the Biden family, which it didn't really stand out. That's his politics. Why do you think all our, you know, Nancy Pelosi is a multimillionaire in these things? But nevertheless, we have that there was a document. Was it 1023 of the FBI showing direct payments up to $10 million to Joe Biden? It's even claimed on his taxes this time, and which is. One would say that's evidence of a bribe when you can't account for $5 or $10 million showing up in your bank account from a foreign source. But then, you know, you have the FBI saying, you know, we're not going to produce the documents. We're not going to comment on this, stonewalling any investigation. Perhaps that's part of the political calculation of having this indictment of Trump, which, you know, gets it out of the news cycle. So the media doesn't have to cover it at all, any of it. We do have the fact that so many of our politicians are immensely wealthy when they've been collecting government, you know, salaries for so many years, you know, making 150 grand a year, not going to accumulate 10, 20, $30 million, you know, but that just showed just that we've just come to accept this corrupt system.
Well, yeah. And yeah, it's like we said before, they're going to do anything to protect this. And you know, I think I've said this on your show before. It's very simple that we, you know, when your friends are in charge, you can get away with a lot. When you have people, when everyone is in, when enough people are in on the conspiracy, then nothing's going to happen. And enough people in Washington, D.C., enough people in powerful places are, you know, in on Ukraine, anything happening in China, any kind of corruption anywhere. And then the cherry on top of all that is they got their man in as the top cop. Merrick Garland is the prop. Merrick Garland is one of the most vile human beings ever to serve in any government in history. You just have to look at this guy's record, the things that he's done, the things that he's been in on.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, to me, I look at Merrick Garland and I see like the you know, like the person who the Iroquois get into certain spots at certain times to make sure that the corruption keeps flowing, the power stays in one place.
Yeah, and the chutzpah and the shamelessness helps in this area because people are just aghast. I mean, you couldn't be that shameless, could you? Oh well.
The fact that they can't hide it anymore is just. I mean, that's the, I guess, a white pill. But I think we've also, a lot of people on the, you know, quote unquote, right, conservative, you know, conservatives, whatever people want to call them. And I think they're seeing through it. And I think that we may be getting to the point where a good percentage, not even close to half, but a good percentage of people are looking upon the government as, like Eastern Bloc, people who lived in Eastern Bloc countries looked upon. They knew it was corrupt. They didn't believe in it. They didn't believe half this, most of the stuff that was coming down from on high. And they're just like, we just don't know what to do now. There's just nothing we can do because the enemy has control of everything. I mean, they have control of DAs.
The levers of power, the immediate levers of power, the system that's supposed to have these checks and balances is completely corrupted. So what do? You don't have no agency. You have no political representation. You could do things like at the state level where you have attorneys general and governors step in. I mean, there was a hint of that when Trump was indicted on the Stormy Daniels stuff up in New York, when the governor said, I wouldn't approve any extradition, which is a form of interposition there. Trump went up there and presented himself so that he didn't have to do that. But that was an example of what can be done at the state level in response to a lot of this stuff, meaning the federal government's losing legitimacy. And you see this like when, MSNBC or CNN are covering the indictment down in Miami, district court or federal court rather, as being momentous and important and serious, when the majority of the public look at it and see it as a sham. Obviously, it's a political hit by the Justice Department, and I think the majority of people look at it don't. In the past, we hear that an indictment comes down from federal court and there's federal judges, and the presumption is that these are serious people who apply the law, despite the politics, and there must be something to it. Most people don't think there's anything to these charges, despite what they're saying on CNN or MSNBC or, So it's they're losing all credibility, and the FBI is a joke in the eyes of most people now. So it doesn't really matter. They're losing legitimacy, of the common man on the street, which is a serious problem for the regime.
Well, it's a problem for the regime, and that's also when you see an escalation in violence. Mm-hmm. They have to, if they're losing legitimacy, there's one of two things that they can do. They can either clean it up, which they're not going to do. If they clean it up, if they come clean, people are going to jail. So I just see it as an escalation of violence. Just see that they're going to get more violent, and they're going to target more people. I don't think the average person who is, speaks out against this or who goes to church. I mean, I don't think the average needs to worry. We don't need to, I don't think we should be promoting fear porn, but we should be prepared. And I think that, the likelihood of anybody who's listening to this will be, more than one person would be singled out in this, as long as they're not doing something insanely stupid, is like zero. But, there are people, and I think more along the lines of people who are going to try to organize, that's probably what's going to happen. I think you're going to start seeing more, like from the quote unquote right, popping up more organizations to try and fight this. And I think that's where the focus is going to be. They're going to seek to crush any kind of organized resistance, whether it be legal, whether it be just activists marching, things like that, like they've already done. And, the person who lives in a town of 1,500 who stands up at their board meet at the city council meeting and says we need to try to fortify our locality against anything like this, I don't think that's really something that they would concentrate on.
One thing is I'm amazed at sort of the chutzpah of it all when Comey gave that interview about a week ago about the Trump presidency being a retribution presidency if you were elected again. As if this is a guy who is the center of the intelligence coup that the Durham report exposed, And here he is. He was fired by Trump in 2017, but he bragged about being part of this. And now here he is talking about Trump being a retribution president, as if, again, this is a good example of projection. They're the ones who are weaponizing the legal system and suppressing opposition, intimidating, using the weapon of, you know, more or less they've now they're you're expanding lawfare to criminal law. But this is exactly the case where he was one of the coup plotters, and here he is warning us about a retribution presidency. Well, if anything, that's one of the reasons why he might be elected again, assuming the elections weren't fortified against such a thing, which I think they are now. But the idea was, wouldn't you want a retribution presidency if indeed we get something like the Durham report? I mean, shouldn't the public expect some sort of retribution or punishment or accountability for this, you know, a crime against the state? This was a real insurrection.
Well, you know, it's always accuse your enemy of that which you're guilty. And Comey doing this is, this is trying to head it off at the pass and put it in people's heads in case Trump does get elected. And it seems like they're doing everything to make sure that he's not even qualified, that he won't even be qualified constitutionally or legally to run for president. So, that's what it seems like. I wish I believed that a second Trump presidency would be that. You know, that's what I would like to see. That's what it's what he promised to do the first time, drain the swamp. I mean, which was good rhetoric, but I mean, even if he, I'm not even saying he meant it, but even if he did mean it, I think he was, you know, just insanely naive on exactly how much resistance he would get. But yeah, I mean, the idea that Trump is going to get reelected and he's going to start cleaning house and he's going to start throwing people in jail and he's going to start having whatever swamp attorney general he chooses, because you know that's what's going to happen, is going to be prosecuting people from the Biden administration or Hillary Clinton because you'd be in jail. I mean, it's all fantasy, and it's, you know, he knows what he's doing when he says stuff like this. He knows that he's just putting it in people's minds, and he's trying to make the middle shy away from voting for Trump.
Yeah, and you know, always wonder, you know, why doesn't ADL have its Twitter account shut down for going after Twitter? Because Elon Musk says, well, I believe in free speech, so I can't do that. So there you go. But they don't believe in free speech, so why should you grant them that privilege?
That's the problem with people who, you know, like Musk, who, you know, at least parrot classical liberal kind of talking points. Mm-hmm. But, you know, classical liberals are willing to let their, because they're so principled, they're willing to let their enemies get away with things and defend their right to do it that they wouldn't, that their enemies wouldn't allow them to get away with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just to me, that's the history of this country up until a certain point, is, you know, the quote unquote right, which is basically saying, hey, you know, we just want to be left alone. And the left going, well, we're never going to leave you alone. And the right going, well, you're hypocrites.
You're hoping to shame them or embarrass them.
Yeah. And if these are people who don't have shame and aren't don't know what shame is, don't get embarrassed. And all they care about is power. And yeah, so kind of that's another, you know, I try to explain to people that's how we got here. We got here because, you know, classical liberalism is live and let live. And you let communists go take over universities and take, you know, people started preaching the most vile stuff. And, you know, I'm not one of these people who really cares whether woke is communist. You know, I'm not, you know, James Lindsay to me is a moron and I can't stand the guy. I think he's a snake who says that liberalism is what's going to conquer woke. And I think he could very well be sent in to lead the right astray on purpose. So yeah, he argues, oh, it's Marxism. And then, you know, Paul Gottfried says, no, it's liberalism. All I know is that whether it be liberalism or whether it be Marxism, this country was basically founded on classical liberalism, and classical liberalism allowed the wolf to get in.
Well, the language of rights in these things, if you talk about civil rights, were used, weaponized, and still used to disrupt and destroy societies, and whether it's, you know, United States or South Africa. And once you talk about the language of rights, this goes back as far back, I guess, in modern history, the French Revolution, this, you know, the slogans and these things, even they even contradict each other, like, you know, liberty, equality, and fraternity. Well, they all kind of contradict each other if you think about it, but it makes for a great bumper sticker. They didn't have cars back then, but it was, they knew the power of slogans and these things. So people, and again, you get the mob going and no one's going to reflect, and you can, and the organized group is, or minority is always going to be able to exploit the mob, as we see all throughout history. But as far as the how this encroaching tyranny that we're told to fear, whether or not, you know, the man on the street, the common man, should have to fear something. Well, to the extent that he'll fear something, one thing is the declining economy and social upheaval and crime. And you can say something like the whole Soros operation with the district attorneys sending in agents of chaos just to sow chaos and crime in the communities is what I guess most people have to worry about. You know, whether or not their wives and daughters will get raped, or they'll get mugged or shot, or, you know, the stores, they, you know, will get shut down from a mob, or shoplifting and these things. These are the things we all worry about with crime. And crime can be utilized to achieve all types of whether it's a regime change or just, you know, playing games with the value of real estate, it can be weaponized. And these people do play at that level, and they have the juice to manipulate the political process. You know, heck, they overthrow nations, currency games like Soros and the games they play at that level, the Rothschild banking level. But there's an interesting report here. The Southern Poverty Law Center reported that Moms for Liberty and other printer-right groups were hate groups, and they added to the hate map that they produce, claiming, you know, close to 900 hate groups across the United States. And they pretty much count each chapter of Moms Against Moms for Liberty as a hate group, so they can just multiply the amount of hate groups. It's like, you know, it's like the ADL reporting anti-Semitic incidences. Well, it's kind of a conflict of interest because they make money off reporting off incidents. And that's how they get the fundraising going, and that's how they have political capital. But the Southern Poverty Law Center lists mainstream conservative groups alongside groups like the KKK. It's placed Moms for Liberty and other parental right groups in the hate map for being anti-government extremist groups. So if you're against the government, you're a hate group. That's an interesting twist that you're doing here. Apparently, Moms for Liberty, they're known for going to, I guess, libraries and school board meetings and protesting all the queer nonsense with the LGBTQ and all the child grooming and all the perversion that they're teaching kids now. So if you're opposed to that, under the logic of intersectionality, you're a hate group and you're an anti-Semite because basically anti-Semitism, racism, and homophobia and transphobia are all the same thing, according to Joe Biden. He actually said that. But now this is kind of how they can be, you know, and we all know what Merrick Garland did a couple of years ago when he commissioned a letter from the National School Board Association asking them to ask the DOJ to investigate parental groups, parents who were speaking up at school board meetings for being domestic terrorists. So again, we're getting the area of definitions. What do you mean by this? What do you mean by anti-Semite? What do you mean by terrorist? What do you mean by hate? Extremists and their definition of extremism. But this is how these groups like the SPLC, ADL, working in cahoots with the Department of Justice and FBI to, if not terrorize, but certainly try to chill and intimidate people from meaningful political activity. This is the type you'd expect, this type of resistance to these things. And of course, no one's speaking up saying, why the hell do you have you know, gender cross-dressing perverts reading books to children at libraries? Why the curriculum at the schools? Why is the White House hosting a drag queen party where the transgender or the queer flag takes center stage over the American flag? You know, why is all this going on? All this nonsense. And of course, all this is going on because these transversaries, if you will, have the backing of very powerful people, the oligarchs, the corporations who have an agenda. Obviously, yeah. I mean, why simultaneously? Why does Bud Light, Target, Major League Baseball all decide to cater to this, to these perverts who represent just a fraction of a percent of the population at the risk of alienating the public at large, which evidently they have? We've had this big backlash now with Bud Light, Los Angeles Dodgers. Why do you have to have a pride night at baseball? I mean, baseball is about sitting back. America's national pastime is sitting back and watching the game. No, and now it has to involve sodomy or the promotion of sodomy, you know?
Yeah. And the person at the SPLC who added Moms for Liberty there, his name is Susan Cork. I wonder if she's part of the Iroquois tribe. But, you know, she's worked for the Brookings Institute. She's worked for, she went to William & Mary, one of the main places that the feds, schools the feds recruit from. American Enterprise Institute, Center for European Policy Institute. I mean, she has basically run the gamut of every kind of NGO, every kind of think tank. And she is, you know, she...
Yeah, Sheldon Adelson is one that bankrolled them, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, she served at...
Paul Singer's another one, yeah.
Yeah. She had previously served at the German Marshall Fund. I mean, this is a... To call this an activist would be, I mean, it would be insulting to call her an activist. She is an agent of Globo Homo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she is Globo Homo. And she's basically saying that these, and she's not basically saying it, she's clearly saying it, that this Moms for Liberty group is, you know, it is a hate group. And you know, you hear Moms for Liberty, and yeah, sure, I mean, maybe they do get together and they wear hoods and they burn crosses, but pretty sure they don't do that. But what do? They want kids to be able to go to school without being indoctrinated into, you know, the the religion of woke.
Yeah, my wife was subbing at a local school, and she teaches at a private Catholic school, but she occasionally does substitute at a public school. And she told me today that the teachers came to her knowing that she works for a private Catholic school, saying, "We hate all this queer stuff." Mm. Several teachers told her that. And so you get a lot of that. I heard another account where librarians working at some of these libraries that are promoting this stuff will produce fake library cards and check out all the queer books so no one gets them.
Basically you have to, at this point, people are going to have to resort to guerrilla warfare
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways in order to stop this, because it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere. I mean, local level, small towns, you're going to see it creep in, and it really is why, you know, small locations and localities need to, at this point, if they haven't already, they need to figure out a way and have a plan that when this comes in for the attack, that you're able to repel it. It's not even a question as to whether we're going to allow this stuff to be taught. We're going to allow this person to speak. You know, we are not going to have gay male kindergarten teachers.
Well,
it's just, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Anita Bryant was right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Anita, she was, the way she was, the way they treated her, and she was speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she said that the slippery slope was, you know, she said it was going to be a slippery slope. And I think that when it comes to the gay agenda, it's clear. It's clear that the slippery slope is real. That they,
well, it's gone from, you know, do we demand our privacy? Do we want to we demand to talk to your kids?
I was talking to somebody the other day, and, you know, good kid, very young musician. And he's like, I mean, I know all these trans people, and, you know, I see what's happening. I don't want to hate them. I'm like, you don't have to hate them. You have to do everything you can to tell them that the reason why, that if they just wanted to retreat into the shadows and live their life like everyone else, it would be our society would be fine with it. But as soon as they started targeting kids, that's why people are taught. That's why the rhetoric is happening.
Yeah. Traditionally it was. Obviously, there are laws against. I saw a videotape. I forget what year it was. It looked like it was probably from the 90s. And there was a British guy talking, and he was talking about laws against homosexuality. Because 1694, if you were caught being homosexual, they burned you alive. 1827, if they caught you being homosexual, you were hung. 1900, there was a year in prison. 1950, it was a 200-pound fine. And guy said, well, why? So these are the laws in England. Why are you leaving England? He says, well, I want to leave England before they make it mandatory.
Yeah, I saw that, though. Yeah.
And now it's effectively becoming mandatory, because if you're not sufficiently deferential, even enthusiastically supportive of it, you are homophobic, transphobic, and that's the same as being anti-Semitic, according to Joe Biden, Justice Department. And you see that with, like, Target now pulling back a little bit on their pride stuff, and then they're getting bomb threats from presumably trannies, I mean, from that side of the aisle, so to, you know, for pulling back a little bit, so that you become immoral for not promoting their perversion. And they've become, again, all the language of civil rights and dignity and these things. And the problem is, you know, you could say, well, the privacy of the bedroom. The problem is they never stay in the bedroom. And this was that fantasy that you could be a private degenerate or pervert and not affect how you live your life outside. That's never the case. It's like you can't be addicted to pornography at night and then go to your job at the school and not affect how you treat kids or other people around you. It's not the way it works. So even when you say we have to, you know, well, it's okay for adults, just not the kids. Well, no, because adults are going to act a certain way around kids and promote it around kids, especially if you're a sexual degenerate and predatory, which usually they are. And so, yeah, so it was a fantasy to think that you could decriminalize it without promoting it. Decriminalization would inevitably lead to promotion, because the logical civil rights meant that it had to be promoted positively, the same way that logic of rights would lead to racial quotas and affirmative action. It was just the logic behind it all that would never lead to these things. So now we do have effectively, you know, quotas and promote this stuff, even at the grade school level, you know.
Well, it's one of the horrors of democracy is that when you have people who are marginalized because what they do is unnatural, because what they do is so far way out of the norm. Democracy allows them the ability to get people elected, get people into spaces where they can fight to normalize what they're doing, who they are.
Yeah, like California with that state senator Scott Wiener, another Eskimo.
I mean, that guy is,
he walks around like in leather and like he does the Nazi thing.
he's openly advocated for getting rid of age of consent laws.
Yes, he submitted a bill. There's a bill which may pass in California, make it a crime if parents don't affirm a child's gender dysphoria or identity, whatever that is. Of course, and the schools will there to, and if you, you know, again, if you send your kid to a public school in California, they will actively promote that in the kid's mind. So when he comes home and says something, repeating what he's been told at school, and you don't affirm it, they can take your kids away and presumably put him in a foster care home of two homosexual men, perhaps, that can affirm his identity, his gender identity.
Somebody called my attention to an article that was written in 1987 by Marshall Kirk and Orestes Pill, which is a pseudonym, called The Overhauling of Straight America. And, you know, they basically come out, you know, this is the first thing we have to do. Well, the second thing they had to do was they need to portray gays as victims, not as aggressive challengers. And there's actually one sentence in here where it says, in practical terms, this means the jaunty mustachioed muscle man would keep very low profile in like gay commercials and other public presentations, while sympathetic figures of nice young people, old people, and attractive women would be featured. And then there's a parenthesis here, and it says, it almost goes without saying that groups on the farthest margin of acceptability, such as NAMBLA, must play no part at all in such a campaign. Suspected child molesters will never look like victims. So in this article, where they're basically laying out a strategy, which seems to have worked, to what they say, desensitize the American public concerning gays and gay rights. Even in this article, they invoke and they mention NAMBLA.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from 1987.
Yeah, and obviously the whole idea when Joe Biden speaks at the White House, the trans kids, we hear you, we have your back, you have our support. That is a direct attempt to sexualize children.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, if
kids, I'm sorry, you're a 5-year-old, they're not even sexual at that point. It's even hard to tell the difference unless you dress them a certain way. They obviously, to get older, the differences become more profound and meaningful. But when they're little, it's even Freud, accounted for a latency period. You know, these things. But now there's open, then you have this whole thing where they have to affirm it, and you have hospitals. I just read an article that one of the largest Catholic run insurance programs is paying for transgender surgery, reassignment, mutilation of children at these hospitals, because it's a big money making thing now, despite the agenda behind it and these things. But who paid for the research in this stuff? Because you're a surgeon, how do you train for this? So why am I doing this when there's real, surgeries need to be performed out there? You're wasting time with this stuff. But the whole point is that, if a kid, if a minor can start that transitioning, if you will, the mutilization and chemical poisoning and these things, they call it these, like, you're not really, that's a myth. You're not transitioning to anything. You're being poisoned. You're being mutilated. You're not changing your chromosomes. You're not becoming something you're not. Why can't a kid side become a prostitute? Why can't the parent encourage the kid? Why can't the parent pimp the kid out? It's the same logic.
Well, that's the whole, that's an argument like I saw people making about, drag queen story hour is fine because, the parents can, if the parents take them, if the parents choose to, they can do anything with their kid that they want. I'm like, okay, then if they can, they can marry off an 8-year-old girl to a 40-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where does it stop? Do we have nuance in this?
For an in-kind payment.
Yeah. Do we have nuance here? But I think this whole thing, this whole trans thing, and this isn't an original thought on my part. People have said this before, that, if it's legal for 8 and 9-year-olds to make a decision about altering their body and altering their chemistry on their own, then it's okay for them to have sex. And I think that that's what this is all about. We talk that slippery slope. The slippery slope is, to me, the bottom of that slope was always pedophilia. And it's why when when Ben Swan did his special in Atlanta on Pizzagate, where he's like, I'm not saying this is true, I'm just going to lay out all the facts, that he had to disappear for a year after that.
Yeah.
You know, and it's why, you know, when I had Daryl Cooper on my show and we talked about Pizzagate, we had to talk about it like it was the most ridiculous, stupid conspiracy theory out there. Although Daryl laid out clearly the, why people thought these things, you know, what was the quote unquote evidence for it? I've always thought that's the end of this. That's what they want. Because if they can do that, if they can get that, then everything's on the table. Murder. I mean, everything's on the table.
Well, you have the emails, the Podesta emails, and the strange taste of art of John Podesta's brother, right? The weird. So if I go in a house and someone has paintings of children being tortured, yeah, I can. I think that's a statement about the person's character. I'm sorry. You know, that's an indication there's something off there, you know. And wasn't there also something about like a movie script about killing a federal judge at the same time that Scalia turns up dead in that ranch down in Texas?
Yeah, I remember that too.
The strange death of Antonin Scalia, no autopsy. But then again, you know, these things only occur in other countries, political assassinations, and you know, who would ever want to assassinate a federal Supreme Court justice? What motive would there be, right? People have a hard time accepting these things because we're kind of raised in the Western liberal tradition, which it's presumably circumscribes or limits state power. We're taught that Western governments are bound by sort of these constitutions and elaborate procedures that constrain its power over, you know, you and me, the citizen. And you know, we give a certain religious belief to these things. So when you expose this corruption, the dark, you know, underworld that really the deep state or the criminal underworld elements, things that are really going on, and how the role they play in our politics, people are going to reject it because it's a paradigm shattering experience, or information can shatter one's paradigm, and also it can also make someone feel powerless, the black pill, if you will. But one thing the past few years have shown is that this Western ideal hasn't really aged well, particularly in recent years. We don't see Western governments or supposed liberal states behaving like they're limited systems, you know, who have to answer to the sovereign people. It's something more akin to something that we saw like in the Soviet Union, perhaps even worse in a way. But one thing we can say that what is state power? Is it alphabet soup agencies as elected representatives, or is it corporate power behind it? Because we saw the recent talk, it wasn't recent, it was a video of Larry Fink talking about how people have to force change on people using more or less the financial power of this asset managing firm to change policy, to change behavior. And everyone in the room is kind of nodding and accepting it, that corporations take a leading role in supposed ESG, environmental social governance. And this is how you spearhead change in society. This is before the, you know, outside politics, electoral politics, these things. So you utilize your ability, your leverage financially to encourage things and discourage other things, not just whether you're investing in so-called fossil fuels or green energy or promoting global homo, making it mandatory to promote global homo, where again, essentially becomes mandatory to promote homosexuality in your society, which we're seeing now today with these companies. And we saw it with Bud Light. Why was Bud Light Why is Major League Baseball, why is Target doing these things? Well, because they get rewarded for doing these things. They get punished for not doing these things. And that's what you're seeing with ESG, is the ESG, why, you know, their brand name, they're destroying their brand name because they're trying to pump up their ESG score. And a lot of people don't understand how this works, is that these corporations are no longer functioning on a profit and loss thing. They're willing to lose money in order to promote the global home revolution, because the corporate structure, which is the real power, manifested or incarnated in people like Larry Fink, who do come from a specific tribe of people who see themselves as a right through tikkun olam to undermine society, the morally subverse society, to make it a better world as they see, at least better for them. But what bottom line is the kind of the checks and balances on the state, the competing branches of government, don't work. The whole system has been sort of, they all cooperate now to promote the very system, sort of a unified system. And so there are our system, basically the political science that we've been taught, the philosophy, the system simply don't work. And once that doesn't work, what are people to do? You recently have done some shows on something like on the Spanish Civil War and Francisco Franco. And are we reaching a point in the United States where you're going to need a strong man to step in and sort of cut the Gordian knot and rip everything out and start anew, because the system simply is not working? We're seeing it's open tyranny now. And it's just a question of who's going to have the guts and the wherewithal and the agency to do something about it and to take our chances with that, as opposed to relying on this false liberal order, which is becoming increasingly openly tyrannical, and not just tyrannical, satanic, as you saw at the White House this week. That's a rant. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. The Franco people are talking about that. The Protestant Franco. I've seen that reference on social media a lot. I think that quite possibly you can have that kind of person statewide, on the state level or on the local level as well. But as far as that machine in Washington, D.C. that has seemingly unlimited power, yeah, it's going to take somebody special to, somebody who has more guts than Donald Trump or even a Ron DeSantis, somebody, let's say somebody who, if they pass a hate speech law in their state, they don't go to another country to sign it. Yeah, you would think that people who are passing, laws in their country, in their state, I wish they considered it their country, in their state, they would go to the Capitol to sign it, not go to a tiny little country socialist ethno state, in the Middle East, in order to do that. So I don't see, people talk about the Franco and the Protestant Franco or whatever. I don't see that person being somebody who is friendly to basically the tribe that runs our banking, runs our law, runs our medical, runs our pharmaceuticals, basically has people in the highest offices of every single industry, no matter what, in the United States. I just don't see that. How do you accomplish what needs to be done when that is your when you have a priority to protect the people who seemingly have screwed this all up?
Yeah.
And not out of because they're incompetent, but that's just because they're subjectivists and they're rationalists. They expect you to be objective. You're supposed to be, when it comes to racism, you know, that's objectively wrong. And if you're a racist, you know, there's something wrong with you. But when it comes to their morality and how they carry themselves, then it's subjective. Then it can, anything can be rationalized. Mm-hmm. Anything can be explained away. Any kind of objective truth can be explained away using Talmudic devices.
Yeah, it's repressive tolerance. Yeah, you don't afford your enemy the same freedom you grant yourself.
Correct.
Yeah. It's this exercise of power. It's the if you have like a Carl Schmitt's understanding of politics, his sort of clear-minded view of these things, which is a rejection of liberalism. So he's accused of being a Nazi because he was the so-called Nazi lawyer. But right. His observations about the reality, you know, of the situation are worthwhile, because he's sort of acknowledging a truth, whether it was an uncomfortable truth about politics in general, meaning that it's a question of exercising power. And this myth of neutrality in the liberal order, whether you can have judges who are actually neutral, despite the fact they're politically appointed and they're operating in a political ecosystem, that they're going to be independent. Okay, if you believe that, fine. And, you know, it's never been the case, and it perhaps never will be the case. So we have to deal with that reality.
There's another reality we have to deal with. It's the reality that the spirit that we live under, that everything operates under, banking, no matter what it is, that spirit would exist even in the absence of the people who created it.
Mm-hmm.
They could not be present, but they created capitalism. They created socialism. They create everything. Basically everything we do, basically the way this country runs and the way banking runs, the way pretty much anything that we do on a daily basis was created and designed by one group. And that group, their morality is subjective, and they hold rationalism in the highest regard. And there's no way that we can survive beyond with that. So not only the whole spirit of everything we do and how everything runs needs to be overturned.
Yeah, we're coming to like an end of an epoch, 500 years perhaps. You can maybe trace it back to the Protestant Reformation, perhaps. And I was reading Heller or Belloc's The Servile State. Mm. And he was talking about the rise of capitalism in England, how it was based all on theft. And the ideology of capitalism, of classic liberalism of late 19th century industrial England, was there to rationalize the theft.
Yes.
And
Werner Sombart writes about that too. Mm-hmm. In The Jews and Modern Capitalism, that it's just basically we have been taught that there's no other way. Usury is the only way that money could ever flow or exist.
Yeah, debt, perpetual debt. We need debt. Something like America with the baby boom, with a large college population working and employed, America's running up massive debt. Why is that? Because it's a usurious system. And the whole system is based on debt-based money, which then someone's collecting the interest on those payments, and it's perpetual debt. And of course, usury does. It creates an oligarchy, who the creditor is. In the past, there were things like, you had jubilees, or the records were burned, you had riots. And this hasn't been done in the West. And we're seeing just how top heavy, how laden the system is down with debt. And now it's just a joke. Like, we saw that with the recent debacle or dispute, supposed dispute or controversy regarding the debt ceiling. Mm-hmm. you literally, Congress has to run these $1 trillion deficits now, lest the whole system collapse. What does that say for the about the system?
Well, you know. Yeah, it means that that the system is enslaved to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the system is running on debt, who's that debt owed to?
Yeah, and usury is the leverage that was gained through usury was how the Jews were able to gain acceptance and want the British establishment throughout the West. And that's how they more or less were able to take over the British Empire in the 19th, early 20th century.
Yeah,
and that's that has real consequences because it also that's why you had the Irish potato famine. They call it the potato famine, basically, but the food was exported during the famine, so the indebted British aristocracy could maintain their interest payments to their Jewish creditors because the British aristocracy wanted to build large manor homes and live it up. And this is where, again, the weakness of, again, of the goyim or, comes into an account here because it basically gets the inability to live within one's means. And it's the same way that if you, partake in whether it's the vices like gambling or pornography, these things, your weakness is being exploited. So you have to also acknowledge the sinfulness and the weakness on our end that have enabled this to, we've delivered ourselves into our own bondage. Maybe I'm blaming the victim too much, but I'm just acknowledging a reality. There's a spiritual weakness which allows people to be corrupted by this.
Yeah, no. And I think that the people who are doing the corrupting are well aware of that.
I mean, you ever notice how much gambling there is now, like with sports? Have you watched the, sporting event, like a NFL game?
I don't watch sports anymore. It just after 2020, it really just got soured on it.
But there's constant ads for like gambling, MGM, and there's just complete vice now. And it used to be considered a vice. I was listening to was Ramsey Paul was talking about that he was on a plane one time and there was a church group flying to Vegas for the weekend.
You're
a church group. This is sin. You're not supposed to do this.
I drove through Louisiana on I-10, and everywhere you stop in Louisiana, you stop at gas stations have casinos in them. And I didn't notice this, and I noticed it about every single one that we went to. Every stop we made as we were driving through, and we drove through the lower part of Louisiana, so it was the longest part of Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And I didn't notice this because I was driving, but my wife told me, she said, the amount of billboards for, do you have a gambling problem? Dial this number. And it's like, well, okay, well, I can think of an easy way to try to stop that.
Don't provide the gambling.
Yeah.
Don't exploit these people's weaknesses, their desperation.
Yeah. I mean, and I think anyone who is familiar with human nature or familiar with humans knows that, I would assume a lot of the people who are listening to this are very responsible people who have, good impulse control, probably very low time preference people, but that's not most people. And people need to be led. People need to, in most cases, people need to be told what to do. Sometimes people need to be told you're not going to gamble anymore. We're not going to provide the means. And okay, sure, a black market will pop up and people will be betting on games. Okay, it's better than making it credible by making it legal and by putting it in their face every time they want to stop by to get gas or to stop and get a soda or get a beer or something.
Well, yeah, isn't it preferable to have a red light district as opposed to your entire community drenched in pornography and sex?
Yeah, I mean, I was talking with a friend of mine about that. You know, he's like, he grew up in Toronto, and he said when he was growing up in Toronto, he did not know what these massage parlors were. And they were all in like one area. And then, you know, when he got old enough, he's like, oh, okay. But it was confined to one area, you know, but the problem you get there. And I wanted to mention this earlier when you were talking about leftism and you were talking about how, we were talking about the slippery slope, is the problem with leftists is they, and I think I already mentioned this, is they need, they're not going to stay in the shadows. You're going to tell them that they need to stay in the shadows. They're not going to stay in the shadows. They are going to want to come out. They are going to, you know, sex work is real work. Okay, then put it on your, then when you go for a regular job, put it on your resume. They need these things, these vices, these the degenerate acts, their degenerate lifestyle. They need to feel like it's normal. And, you know, when you have somebody who, you know, it's like veganism. I mean, you don't have to guess if someone's a vegan, they're going to tell you, you know, and, you know,
yes, I've run into that. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just going to tell you. They're going, any leftist who is into some kind of something that is out of the ordinary, you know, it's,
it's usually driven by narcissism, if not, you know, it's not idealism, it's narcissism usually.
Yeah. Like polyamorous people, you don't have, they'll tell you. They're going to tell you. And the reason they are going to tell you in a normal conversation is because they need you. They need to know that you think that it's normal, or they're the kind of people who are just looking for a fight. They want you to, they want to expose you for being the fascist that you are because you don't agree with what they do in the privacy of their own home.
Yet they're talking to you about it.
Yes, of course.
And they're advertising in schools or promoting in schools and any parade, because you can't have any parade now without having that. And what happens, they take over, because if you have like a 4th of July parade or even a St. Patrick's Day parade and they demand entry and participation in it, they'll start participating in it. And they'll be garish and flamboyant, and then they'll drive the decent people away. And you won't have parades anymore. So that which is probably the function of why big capital is supporting it, why Global Homo is support of all of BlackRock and these things, because it's a way to atomize, to destroy social cohesion and homogeneity in the society, you know, and they've done that. And of course, it's easier to promote these things if you have a diverse community, because there's no, well, again, it's like in, you know, it's like bowling alone. There's low social trust and no cohesion organization, therefore no resistance to your agenda, which is why there's, you know, they support mass immigration, not just cheap labor. It's just to smash the host culture, whatever homogeneity remains of the host culture. And they've openly talked about that. Barbara Lerner-Specter talked about that. The bankers talk about doing it, you know. So it's a strategy of international finance to render a nation vulnerable to exploitation by destroying its identity. And they use the language of civil rights and liberty and freedom to do that. And it's nice language, but you have to understand the people behind that don't have the best interest of humanity or, you know, of that country at heart there. Good examples like South Africa, which is the apartheid state, the Afrikaner state, was destroyed under the banner of civil rights. And now this country's completely collapsed. It's lost its identity. It was an Afrikaner state. It was created for that reason, to protect the interest of that particular ethnic group. Then it was slowly dissolved by big capital over several decades to render it vulnerable to more exploitation. And now it's completely easy. It's just been more or less robbed by international finance and capital, because they were able to install a democratic government, black government, which offers no resistance, you know, to the Oppenheimers and the Rothschilds who promoted, who's financed the campaign against it to destroy the Boer Republic.
Yeah.
And we see that again, the language of civil rights and diversity and promoting mass immigration throughout Europe and destroying what remains of those societies and those ethnic states, you know, which for some reason have put them on the chopping block. Now, who made that decision? No one put up for a vote, but apparently that's the decision has been made.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So. And, you know, it's slowly, oh, not slowly, it's escalated here. So my generator's starting to
Okay, yeah. So that's good talk. There's just before I was reading Age of Entitlement.
Oh, okay, good.
He writes, in the wake of Roe, the magazine Christianity Today editorialized, Christians should accustom themselves to the thought that the American state no longer supports in any meaningful sense the laws of God and prepare themselves spiritually for the prospect that it may one day formally repudiate them, turn against those who seek to live by them. Well, that's 1973, 74. I think we've reached that point now. If you doubt that, look at that party at the White House this week with the gay flag.
And that party was much worse stuff happened at that party. It is that, you know, people want to make a big deal out of, oh, somebody, some trans person was showing their breasts or something. Look, that's not the point at all. The point is that there was law enforcement and there was probably military on the grounds and they did nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the White House did nothing to stop any of this.
Nope.
That is who's in charge. That's who's in charge now. It is subjective morality and rational, being able to rationalize anything away. And that's mm-hmm. That's the spirit of the age. And that was what was most clear to me. Not that there were, you know, not that there were degenerates there being celebrated. The fact that they went and did what degenerates did, and no one did anything to stop it.
Mm-hmm. You saw the videotape of the there was a guy quoting the Bible verses. It was a town in Pennsylvania. He and maybe a couple of people were there, and they were counter-protesting a LGBT a pride parade. And he was just reading Bible verses out loud, and the cop arrested him.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've had people on my show. I had Scott Greer on my show, and I went after law enforcement. And he cannot have anybody go after law enforcement because his enemy goes after law enforcement. His enemy calls law enforcement that. Well, that's not a reason to. I mean, law enforcement does not. Depending on the area you're in, law enforcement in small towns can be great. They can be your neighbor. They can be people mm-hmm. you went to school with. But when you look at what law enforcement did, especially through 2020, mm-hmm. they did not protect white people. There was a war on white people, and they did not protect white people.
That's why Kyle Rittenhouse got in trouble.
Exactly.
Local authorities stood down.
Yes. And if they are going to stand down, put it this way, if they stood down in 2020 and, you know, upwards of 40 of my fellow Americans got murdered in the streets because they stood down and because they did nothing to stop it, then, and they have not repented of that and apologized for that and changed their ways, I'm not going to support law enforcement just because the scum on the left, you know, decries law enforcement while they're being protected by them. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that arrest was unlawful. So it's not even law enforcement at that point. It's just sheer tyranny.
Yes.
It's just a guy in a badge who's probably either, maybe he was queer himself. So he felt offended by the guy quoting Bible verses.
Yeah. It's amazing to me that people think that that law enforcement is like everyone who becomes a cop is, you know, I lived in Atlanta and I knew some APD, Atlanta PD people. I mean, everyone thinks these are like right wingers and military guys and gun guys and everything. Are you insane? Do you really think that? Have you ever been to New York City? There are 41,000 cops in New York City. You think there's 41,000 right winger cops in New York City? The hell is wrong with you?
Well, the culture in general, because of the past 50, 60 years of social engineering, has been shifted leftward anyway.
Yeah.
So the default position is leftist now. Many people's lifestyles and outlooks and these things.
Right.
Not to mention the fact that a lot of people just they see themselves as being future pensioners, so they don't want to rock the boat. So they're just listening to orders anyway. So
yeah, it's one of the last jobs. It's one of the last jobs around. You know where you'll get a gold watch and a pension.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, I'm going to do whatever I have to do and toe whatever line I have to in order to, you know, to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're just, you know, just following orders.
Yeah.
Right. So I suppose that's not a defense I learned. Yeah.
Yeah. The only public servants, whatever you want to call them, that I have, that I'm going to respect are people who serve me, who I know are serving me and who I know have my best interests at heart.
Well, look what the system does to like FBI agents who actually do take their oath seriously and they whistleblow. But they're fired and they're cut off from any means of support. And they're terrorized by the Bureau and by the press and all that.
Yep.
So they're not rewarded for it, you know.
Yeah.
So, okay, Pete, instead your generator is running low. Hope your power comes back on soon.
It's already back on, but everything's hooked up to the generator. So,
okay, yeah. But anyway, I've had you over an hour and a half anyway. So, and I've taken enough of your time. You want to promote anything?
Sure. The Pete Quinones Show, any podcatcher, looking for it on Odyssey, Rumble, and BitChute, PeteSubstack.com. That's it.
Thank you so much, Pete.
Appreciate it, Tim. Thank you.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.